Welcome to the pod, everyone. A shout out to SGS.
Hey, Rusty, why are we partnering with SGS?
Some good people there. Pretty excited about their sports coaching courses and sports courses. Keen to make them industry ready, so when people leave, they're able to go and transfer it to any kind of industries, coaching, teaching, being an analyst, business, whatever it might be. So I think it's pretty exciting times, really.
So what's so special about their degree courses that others won't be doing?
I think it'll be lots of real good partnerships, opportunities for people to get into different contexts and learn and practice. It'll be feel very applied. People will be stretched and supported and will leave ready to just go and thrive in the big old world out there.
SGS College is the home of Bristol's higher education sports programmes. The programmes are designed to develop unique, innovative and creative sports practitioners ready for industry. Do you want to be a coach or teacher of the future? Start your journey here at SGS College and become more than just a graduate. Visit sgscol.ac.uk to apply now.
DC, how the devil are you?
Rusty, I'm good, mate. I'm good. I see I'm in the bedroom. I'm a bit battered and bruised. I've got away from the madness. It isn't my kids that have kicked the hell out of me. This is stupid rugby again. But no, I'm good, mate. Great to see you.
No, it's good to see you. And was little Raffy Quirk having a snipe at you on Friday night, was he? Is that what was going on?
He had a few snipes. Mate, I'm a big fan of Raffy's. I remember we spoke. My agent put me in touch with him. I think about a year or 2 years ago, he was... I think a little bit like, what am I doing? Not getting any game time, not getting any better. I think our agent, we've got the same agent, so put us in touch. And I was like, yeah, I'll help him out. If I could offer him any advice, then I'd love to. So we had a couple of conversations and I kind of just said to him, like, bide your time. Like, I've seen your clips. Like, you're a very, very good player. Like, it's going to come. And I'm sure we'll go on to this a bit later about the whole thing. But timing and form and selection and taking your chance is massive in rugby if you're gonna make it and you're gonna have a successful career. And one thing that boy is doing is taking his chance. Loved playing against him at the weekend. Didn't love that he scored the winning try. I said to him after we both scored one at a scrum, I said, "That's one all, mate. See who gets the winner." And then he went and got it. But no, I like him. I like what he's about. He backs himself. He's tough. He dips his head and he runs hard, doesn't he? Bless him. Runs into some big lads. But no, I'm really excited to see how good that kid can be.
Nice. I love that. I love the fact that, and again, like, and chatting to Marcus about, you know, he's chatting to people like Finn Russell. And like, I love the fact that players will just like take loads from other players, really, won't they? Sometimes as coaches, and we can take a bit too much credit for some stuff that went on.
Yeah, I think that's rugby, really, isn't it? I don't think that, I've always said it, there's not many idiots in rugby. There's not many bad people. I think everybody is a good person deep down. If you play rugby and you play in a professional rugby team, if you're not, you get found out. So for me, I'd like to think the way I try and be is the way how my sort of, when I joined Leeds and the old boys were, you know, Gordon Ross, Rob Rawlinson, Dan Scarborough, like these type of lads who were great with me and just so nice and welcoming. And David Reese, the winger, was just hilarious.
Like, legend.
Just loved, absolute legend. And they were so kind to me and I was just trying to ask questions and probably annoyed the shit out of them. But I always try and be that person now that I'm a bit older, that if anybody asks for advice, I'd love to give people advice, because all I want to do really is see good players playing rugby. And one thing Raffy Quirk is a good player. And if any bit of a nugget that I could give him would help him, then I'd be so happy for that. So I've always tried to be that type of guy to hopefully help the young kids.
Nice, mate. That's a good view of the world. And Dave Reese is currently a personal trainer in Bristol. I saw him a few months ago. He's top man. I speak to Dave.
How's he looking? Good rig. He's in, still.
So to be honest, in their gym, which is a really nice place, there's pictures on the wall and everyone else is like just a normal picture and Reese's is full England kit. I think it's the try he might have scored when he chipped it over Jonah. Mate, how come you got a different picture than everyone else?
Class, mate. That's class. Yeah, Reese was an absolute legend. One of the funniest blokes. I only got really a year with him. We kind of Only had a year, but it was a fun year. Just watching Reece every day in training, just take the piss out of people. Nice. Him and Biggsy were a good little double act.
Biggsy just sent me a message today saying that the obviously the bath owner's on the phone to him now, like need saving. It's a classic text.
I reckon Biggsy might be the last person on that list to go and save that.
I think there's a high chance he's near the bottom of the list.
Yeah.
Mate, look, thanks for jumping on. And I guess I'm trying to theme them around stuff. I want to theme this a bit around skill and like how you've got to be skillful. I guess also a little bit of how you're helping other people be skillful. Like, I mean, and your origins are, you know, again, you played a lot of football. So King of Sheffield Wednesday, as I recall, played a bit of sevens. Like, what was the stuff like earlier on that you think's helped you like today?
I definitely think playing, my mum and dad sort of introducing me to as many sports as possible massively has helped me being a rugby player. So cricket, you know, hand-eye coordination, rugby, obviously football, kicking the ball. My dad was a big football fan and massive on players, hated players that couldn't kick with a bad foot, like with a passion. That was his biggest bugbear.
Me too.
I hate me. I hate it as well. So he used to roll a ball. He used to roll a ball to my brother on his right foot. He'd kick it out his right foot, roll it to his left foot. He'd spin round and kick it with his right foot still. But he'd roll it to me and I'd kick with my right, or he'd roll to my left and I'd kick with my left. So he was like, oh, okay. So for instantly, early doors, I think I was a bit of a, I could use both feet, which was great for me. And I feel as comfortable left and right. Kicking a football, rugby ball, probably I'm definitely more confident kicking right footed, but I definitely practice with my left foot. My son now is a left footer, don't know where it's come from, but I don't know whether I was meant to be maybe a lefty. And he's now taken the gene on, and he's got a little wand on him, to be fair to him. But yeah, loads of different sports from an early age. Like I say, the cricket was the hand eye coordination. I did a lot of gymnastics, which I think helped me be flexible. Not so flexible anymore, but I was always outside kicking a ball, or to be fair, I wasn't passing a rugby ball around. I was outside kicking a football around every single day, and a repetition of doing that, I think nothing can beat repetition, I don't think, when it comes to skill. And the biggest thing I've probably learned as I've gone is that doing that but under pressure. Like, I can go and pass 100 balls with absolutely no pressure on me, no fatigue, and they'd be fine. Like, they'd be all right. But if I go and put a little decision-making drill in it, or add a bit of fatigue, or make sure, you know, I only use one hand, try and change it up a little bit. I've had to do that and learn over the years that practicing skills with no pressure will only get you so far. But under pressure, that's when you really sort of see the benefits in the big games.
Nice. I've written down a few things. I mean, I think it's a great thought experiment, isn't it? That, let's say your son is left-footed, like, we'll do this pod in 12 months' time and he needs to be right-footed dominant. Like, actually, yeah. You've got to, like, really go, I'm going to swing the dial. I also wondered whether you were the favourite son for being able to use both feet.
No, I wasn't. I wasn't the smartest son. So I always think my brother was the clever one, and then my little sister came along, and then she was like the baby. So I was the middle. I was the middle one that no one really cares about. You know,
didn't get much love.
I had to be good at sport.
Tough love helped. And then the other thing is, like, again, like I think a lot of people spend a lot of time practicing on level one. So like level one passing will take, you know, will help you solve level one problems, won't it? But of course, like, there's got to be some time in the week, and made me kind of, and I guess it's a question to you, like how comfortable are you with like your individual practice looking a bit messier, some stuff not going so well? Because my sense is back in the like 19th century when I was playing, lots of people wanted 100% perfection. It was actually quite like, we'll drill this. And there was all this talk of like Richard Hill, he'd do, you know, 10,000 passes a day, but clearly with no decision making. And no, is it something you become more comfortable with?
Yeah, I think I'm quite lucky at the club I'm at in terms of nothing's really perfect. We don't see that it can be perfect, really, at Quinn's. It's chaos. Rugby's a game of chaos. I think it's a game of chaos. And for example, you take the scrum half pass from a ruck. Like I say, you can go and practice just passing a ball when it's on a play, no one's around you, got all the time in the world. I can go and do that and I'll hit the target 10 times out of 10, easy. But rugby isn't perfect. Like a ruck isn't perfect. At the weekend, I've got all these South African players playing for Sale who are trying to nail me as I'm passing the ball. And I'm literally getting the ball away, getting nailed. Didn't get a penalty for it because the linesman was looking the other way. But so practicing things like that, where you've got people coming to get you, got people shouting in your face and making it harder. You know, you've got to practice in a harder environment to then, when it comes to the game, you go, oh, okay, this is actually a little bit easier. So, like I say, putting fatigue bits on it, putting decision-making drills on it, whether I run or pass or kick, you know, I'm not just passing. It's an all-court sort of game. You've got to practice that way.
Nice. And then I've been thinking a bit about this. So I've watched you guys train in 2012. I remember watching, you know, and the way you trained. I definitely watched thinking, oh, I would quite like to join in there. It looks like good fun. And then I speak to quite a few of your players now about training and some of your coaches, and it sounds like a bit of a throwback to 2012. I'm actually curious as to, like in between, like you must have had some times where you thought, like, this isn't, like, as good as it could be. And again, my question is off mic, so, and it's not like aimed specifically to you, but again, I guess what I notice is players who will kind of go along to get along a little bit at times. So actually, instead of going, you know, we could make this a little bit different, we could actually put this into training. Is that something that you've experienced?
Yeah, I think sometimes when your boss is your boss, you do have to toe the line a little bit. I think as players, I really prefer that relationship where the coach has with the players, where they want feedback. They want to know how the players feel. And it's not always been that way. I've been in environments where it's been completely the other way, where you just get on with it and you have to do it. Definitely in the last year, we had some real honest talks with coaches and senior players about how we both saw what we needed to do. And we all agreed that to get this club back to what we think it's the best at is we have to change training. Training's where you learn everything and you set the seed for what you're going to do on the weekend. So we went completely back to basics and to getting boys, every single player, 1 to 15, comfortable with ball in hand again. Comfortable to play a short ball, to play a ball out the back, to play a missed pass. Every single player in our team now does that because we do it regularly in training. And we decided that we're going to train shorter and sharper. It's going to be incredibly intense. We're going to work really, really hard, but there'll be no meetings in the middle of it. There'll be no dissecting things and working out ways how to do it. It'll be on to the next thing, bounce through drills. And the one key thing, mate, we said is it has to be fun. Training has to be fun. Like, I know we're in a professional environment. I know we've got to win. You know, there's money at stake for owners and the club and sponsors and all this sort of shit. But we as players said, if you don't make it fun, you won't get a buy-in from the players. If you make it hard and you make it fun, boys will love it. And you get lads in and out of training and home earlier, then you're going to get happier players. You're going to get players that work harder for you. And we started doing it and it started working. And I don't think it's rocket science, Rusty. I really don't. I look around the league and I hear stories of other clubs and coaches and what they're doing. And I'm like, why? Like, why are you doing that? And that's why I feel very lucky that we play at the club and the club listen to us. And the biggest thing, I think, of it all, mate, is trust. It's trust between the coaches and the players, that the players trust the coaches' opinions, the coaches trust the players. And you go out there, and as players, then you have to back it up. And we're trusted to go and back it up on the weekend.
So many little side avenues I'm going down now. I mean, someone said to me today, why wouldn't enjoyment be your number one thing, Rusty? Give me like a reasonable like reason for that. And the reality is, like, enjoyment is like digging deep. It's like training it beyond match intensity with a scenario and almost making it and thinking, right, next time we're going to make it. Like, that is, that's enjoyment for competitive people like you, isn't it?
100%, mate. 100%. Like, I wouldn't enjoy going into training and having, I mean, some days I like going to training and having an easy day, like, because I'm old, but I don't enjoy going into a training and it not being competitive and not feeling like I've got anything out of it, because, you know, what's the point? You're not getting any better. So, but by having fun doesn't take away the seriousness of it. But I definitely think with our club and our sort of DNA, fun is in the DNA. It is what Quinns is all about. If we're going to be true to ourselves, then we get our fun from playing an attacking, expansive rugby that hopefully inspires people. Like, that's what we like to do. So we have to live that every day, and you have to live that in training. And the biggest thing for us, our training is so competitive. Like, our second team's a joke. Like, the lads who aren't playing, some of the stuff they're doing in the week is unbelievable. But that is what's helping the team, and that's what's driving the team towards a win. Like, I said it last year when we won the league, we didn't win it because of the 23. We won it because of the 45 that we had, 100%. And everybody was on the same page, and everybody felt trusted. Everybody enjoyed the environment. Everybody worked hard. Everyone had fun, and we all lived it together. Whereas I've definitely been in Quinns teams in the past where you've got 15 lads who are happy and the rest of them want the lads to lose because they're not happy about the whole environment, which is more of a cultural thing. But last year we got it right.
Well, you're definitely inspiring me with the way you're playing and my son. So you can tick two people off. You also triggered me again. I remember Rob Vickerman always used to he'd like send me videos of like the second team at Yorkshire scoring unbelievable tries in training. But he'd say, like, we get told off for it and then told, oh, no, you need to play like the opposition and you to play. So how you, like, manage and inspire and coach like the non-23? I mean, they're coaching the first team, quite frankly. I was interested in, and like you said, are we all agreed? Like, what does we all agreed look like? Is it like we're all in on this? Or is it like five or six people agreeing, we all agreed?
Yeah, look, I think you probably have to go through some bad times to realise what you need to do. So it got to a stage just where we were playing a style of rugby that didn't really suit us and probably suited other teams more. And we looked at the players around us. Look, if you look at the Quinns team and you look at Marcus Smith and Alex Dombrandt and Caden Murley and Joe Marchant, they're not players that you want to put in structured situations all the time and say, from this part of the pitch, you do this, you do that, you do that, because they're all instinctive players. That's why they're brilliant players, because they play what they see and they do it so well. So we just said to the coaches, give us a framework where we can make decisions, where Marcus can be the leader of the pack and make a decision in an instant of what he sees the defence do, because you could tell him from here the defence are going to do that in a classroom the week before, but it doesn't make any sense because someone might do something completely different. Whereas when you inspire a player to make their own decisions and also not to worry about making decisions is the key thing. It's, you know, we trust you, we back you, go and make those decisions. It isn't a wrong decision, because you've made that decision and the other 14 lads will back you up on it. So there was a genuine buy-in of, right, we need to change things. Let's go back to what we think is the best thing for us with the lads that we had in the room. If you had different players in the room, then, you know, if you're looking at Saracens or Leicester, you'd probably say, well, that probably doesn't suit us. So let's play the Leicester or the Saracens way, which is absolutely fine. But for our group of the individuals we had and the team that we had, we said, we think this is the way we should play. Coaches were fully on board and we went for it.
Nice. And that's a rare skill from coaches, isn't it? So I remember I listened recently to Jerry Flannery on the good, the bad, podcast, and he was like,
yeah,
trying to make sense of it all. He was going, well, I've never played in an environment like this, or coached an environment where you meet the spine at the start of the week, ask them what they want to do, and they're involved in it. And yeah, he was like, it was fascinating listening to him, because again, this is quite a big challenge for coaches to actually get out of the way. I actually think there's some coaches in the Prem who are definitely getting in the way of players and decision making and choice and motivation and all of that stuff. I mean, what have you noticed about the coaches? Like, do you think that's an area they've been good in? Because I mean, my sense is they must have been really good at it.
Yeah, they've been brilliant, because they've helped empower us as players to feel more. We all feel as accountable as each other, whereas maybe before it was coaches tell you what to do. If you don't do it, it's your fault. You know what I mean? Whereas now it's, right, let's build a game plan all together. So at the start of the week, the players and the coaches will all sit up and we'll have our chats. We'll set up the week. And we'll all go through it. And we're all then crystal clear. We're on. And then it's for the leaders to drive it and the coaches to drive it and everyone else then to follow. Like Jerry's a hilarious one, because he's walking around and he's just going, this is just madness. Like this... This club to me is madness from what I'm used to. Because at Munster, he said, like, no, this is what we're doing. This is how we're doing it. You don't concede points. Like, you don't concede tries. And I remember he said to me after the game, I've got my ski goggles over here in the corner of my room, which I brought to the final, because I thought we were going to win. So I put them in the kit bag. And he was like, Danny, like, I've never seen anything like it in my life. Like, who would put ski goggles in their bag? You're packing your kit, you're packing your boots, your gumshoe, your ski goggles. I was like, Jerry, I was so confident we were going to win. I needed the ski goggles, mate. And he was just like, this club's just mental. He says he looks at Marla sometimes, and Marla's dancing around the change rooms before a game, and then goes and makes 25 tackles and plays unbelievably. And he's like, this club's just mental. He calls it mental, but I think it's been great for him to kind of see a different style of club and player and how to do it, really. But it's 100%, like you say, Rusty, it doesn't work without a buy-in from both sides. And I've seen that a lot of times. And at the moment, and look, I'm not saying everything's going to be amazing this year, but we've got a great buy-in. We've got a great level of respect and trust between coaches and players and backroom staff. Everybody's on the same page, and we're enjoying it.
Nice. Well, when Eddie picks you and Marcus for England tomorrow, it might be hard having him playing with you. And what's it like? So when you are like 20-odd nil down to Bristol, like, what are you saying? Like, because again, I see people like smiling and kind of looking not that stressed, looking like they want to win still. Because I'm then also interested in what does happen when you lose, because I would speak to players in the Prem, and if we're talking about skill, they are, on a Saturday or a Sunday, concerned about being dug out by the head coach on a Monday morning. So they are sticking to the plan. If something goes wrong, they're probably doubling down on the plan even more, instead of actually going, we need to break the plan. So how does that feel on the pitch as well? What does that look like? What does it feel like? What are the conversations like?
Yeah, like we were kind of almost, we were laughing a little bit, because Bristol was so good again for 20 minutes. And we were saying, wow, like, okay, lads, we sometimes they let them, you know, if they score one, you go, right, let's switch on. They scored three again, and fair play to them. Like, they scored three brilliant tries. But we generally said at half time, we were like, I think we went in 24-7 down, maybe. And we obviously, we know that we've got previous against them not too long ago that we feel we finished the game better than them. And we just said, look, they're going to have these moments. They're going to have a couple of moments of brilliance, which they did. And, you know, Pietau and Harry Randall scored three tries. But we said, look, we get the first try in the second half. Our energy is going to go like that. They're going to have something in the back of their mind, 100%, that says, oh, no, not again. Can't be Bristol again, you know, and we're so
Bristol.
And we knew if we get one, we'd be all right. We get two, if we get three, we're getting more, because they're going to be gone. And we did. So we just, all we did was say, right, stick to our processes. We hadn't started the game well at all. But the first 5 minutes of the second half, we had an unbelievable 5 minute of defensive set where they had the ball 5 minutes, but they only made 5 meters. We turned them over, went and scored. And then we were like, okay, this is, and all it was is a belief. That's all it was. It's a belief in what we're doing, and what we're doing hopefully should hurt them. And we managed to do it. So yeah, I think it's in adversity, just staying calm and saying, well, we practice this every week. Sometimes the second team will score two quick tries against us, the lads who aren't playing at the weekend. But we've been in this situation before. It's another challenge. Like, let's just stick to what we do, because we know what we can do hurts, what we do can hurt teams. And it went and it worked in the second half.
I imagine the highlight reels from the second team is pretty good.
Yeah, they're decent. Yeah, they do. The worst thing was when Smithy came back from Lions tour and he was in there as well. And it was like, we're like, nah, it's not fair. Like, he can't be in there as well. But no, we've got some, there's some good players, mate. There's some good players coming through, but there's also some good players who lads that people don't even know about yet, that hopefully over the next few years will...
Hey, Will, you tell everyone what you're up to at Core 37.
Hi, Fletch. We're a teamwear brand based in the Northeast, and we're the sister company of Oddballs. We've got the largest sports sublimation factory in the UK, and we've produced for the biggest brands in Europe over the past 7 years. But with Core 37, our in-house brand, you can now access those prices direct to the customer.
Why would people use Core 37?
If I was to pick three, Fletch, it would be our lead time of 3 to 4 weeks, our price, which is lower than anybody else in the industry, and the fact that we're made here in the UK.
What's the stuff you're most proud of with Core 37?
There's loads of stuff, but the key one for me would be working for a company that genuinely believes in its own mission statement, which is to produce performance sportswear at an affordable price. And then underpinning that is the people. Everybody who works here is involved in grassroots sport in some way. And so we genuinely care about what we're doing here. Fletch, why do you want to partner with Core 37?
Apart from the fact you're a Geordie, great people, lots of people involved in sport, really affordable and top quality. Thanks for joining us, Wilkie. Anyone who wants to find out more can go and have a play on their website at core-37.com, or they can reach out directly to tom@core-37.com.
Well, you've got most of the England under-18 backline, so you've got some skillful lads coming through.
Yeah.
What? Talk to me about Marla. So again, like, and maybe Marla and Esther Hazen are interesting for me from a skill point of view, because like Esther Hazen comes over, he's got this kind of, probably played quite a limited game over there. Then suddenly he's actually like, he's really skillful, and Marla's like getting a bit older, but again, like. And for him, I also mean, like, his defensive skills are ridiculous. Like, his ability to, like, end up in a really good position and bang someone is really strong. So I'm just curious, like, I mean, what have you noticed about those two fellas? And, like, how do you think it's got to that stage?
Yeah, like, I think it's interesting when you talk about skills, and probably people would instantly go, oh, okay, you know, throwing it out the back door or a naughty missed pass or something. But the skill of defending the way that Marla does, I've never known a better tackler than Joe Marla. Like you say, he works so hard to get himself in the right positions to then unleash. And he's so powerful, so strong. When he hits people, you hear them. Like, you hear, you know, when you hear someone get hit, like every time Marla,
you can hear I've heard a few people's like souls leaving their body this season. But he is, like, it's really hard to be a big fella who's been scrummaging.
Yeah.
So his awareness, his ability to understand where to look, like, where do I stand? So I end up in a really good position. And he's often banging, like, properly banging people.
Yeah. And it's such a skillful technique. Like, his technique is second to none, I think. And like you say, to play in the front row and do all that stuff that they have to do and play, a lot of the times he was playing for 80 minutes. And last year, the best thing that for us was that Joe didn't play for England, because he was with us week in, week out. And when I say with us, not just on a Saturday and the weekend, he was amazing the weekend, but during the week he was brilliant. So good with the young lads. Young lad Finn Baxter, he's kind of taking him under his wing as a bit of a mentor, and Finn's going to be a brilliant player. But the way he interacts with the squad and inspires the squad, you know, when Joe's in a good mood, everybody is. And he was a brilliant. And then you've got Andre Esterhazen, who he's the freak. He is an absolute freak. He's one of the best rugby players I've ever seen. Like, how powerful, how abrasive he is. People are scared of him. Like, people are scared to tackle him, which is a rare skill. But he's also got the hands and the offload and a left foot and a flick out the back and an off. Like, some of the stuff he does is incredible. And he does it with a smile on his face, the South African sort of look that he's just tough, mate. He's just tough. And if you're going to win big games, you need tough men out there. And Andre is one of the toughest.
Finn Baxter's got a good, he's a class player, and he's got a good role model and mentor there in Joe Marler. And for you, like, so how are you continuing to get more skillful? Like, I'm always like seeing new bits to your game. So even like a couple of seasons ago, we chatted a bit about like your kicks from the base, where you were like kicking it in behind the middle of the defensive line and spotting people on edges. I think you used it a bit against Fafard Sale, where you like to put little cross kicks in. Like, how come you're still getting like more skillful at like 43 years of age?
I think I have to keep developing my game, really. Like you say, I'm not getting any younger. And these kids are getting younger and younger. And I'm playing with, you know, this year is the first year I'm officially the oldest in the squad, which dawned on me when Brownie left. I was like, oh no, this is bad. But I've kind of tried to embrace it and just try and hang around with the young kids at training, try and see what they're talking about. Like, it's a weird world, mate, what these kids live in these days. It's different. It's definitely different. You know, they're talking about girls and I'm like, oh, did you go and chat to her in the bar? And they're like, no, don't be silly. Like, I'll chat to a girl in a bar. I'm like, what do you mean? They're like, no, I'll just find out what her Instagram is and send her a message. I'm like, oh, okay. So these kids, they've got a lot to learn. But no, they keep me on my toes. So I think for me, is in a rugby context, I've got to just try and find different ways of how I can still help the team. Because all I really want to do is kind of help guide these young lads, because what these young lads have got is so special. It's so rare. There's so many unbelievably talented, skillful players that are so instinctive that if I've kind of seen my role now as creating a bit of that instinctiveness for them. So whether it be a tap and go where we're playing against an unstructured defence, or quick throw in from the line out where the defences aren't set, and finding scenarios for these boys where they can just go and express themselves. And the biggest thing I think I can do still is to try and play with tempo, to try and play quickly. Something I've always kind of prided myself on is getting the ball away quickly from the breakdown, something that Harry Randall does incredibly well, Rafi does as well. So if I can get them quick ball when defences aren't set, then they can show what they can do, because they can do stuff that I can only dream of doing.
Yeah, they haven't had to learn the graft at the Skyrack in Leeds, have they?
They haven't. No, they haven't.
They've not gone through that.
Tough there.
They've not had that live rejection. They've just had digital rejection.
They just don't get responded to. Yeah, but no, they've got to face them. Got to face some shutdowns, mate.
And what, I mean, what's it like? So with the youngsters, so Louis and Marcus and Caden, and like, what do you think they're bringing to the squad?
I think they're just their exuberance, their energy every day. I think the biggest thing about all these lads as well is they're great kids. They're great young men that want to work, and they want to work hard, and they want to get better. There's no egos. They're all the competition. Look at it in that back three. The competition's incredible. Someone like Nick David, who's come from Worcester.
Again, funniest man I know.
Very. I can imagine you and him get on very well.
Like, funniest man.
Quotes and yeah, like he's.
I watch his England under 18 video from when we were in South Africa. It is comedy genius.
Okay. So he's someone like him. Can't get in the team at the moment. That's how competitive it is in that back three. And they all just want to play. They just want to play and have fun and enjoy themselves and show what they can do. So for me, work, I say work going into training, and I'm going into the gym with a load of like these kids. I'm looking around, they're all dancing and having a laugh. And, you know, it's obviously very different. If Brownie was here, he wouldn't be having it. The music would be off. But I'm just kind of letting them go with the flow and letting them be.
Do you think he'd get sucked into it, or do you think it would take a little bit of...
he would be fine. Like, if Brownie was still here, yeah, he was obviously for last year. He was there, and he was buying into it. Me and him would just have a look when the lads were like I think Langy and March would take the tops off and dance in the gym, and me and Brownie would just shake our heads and think, you know, if I had tried to do that back in the Leeds days, like you're getting knocked out in training. Do you know what I mean? Like, it obviously doesn't happen anymore. But it's the way these kids are. It's the way they roll. Someone like Joe Marchant is the most space cadet kid in the world. But give him a rugby ball and he can play. So, yeah, it's just great to be around them.
I have a really strong memory, and you might not remember it, of you when we did the session together at ACS Cobham. And you were like running around with the kids playing touch rugby. And it was like you were like the biggest kid there. Yeah. And I felt a little bit sorry for you because I was like, well, you don't look like you do this that often, little fella.
We didn't then. No, we didn't then.
And it got me thinking, like, I don't know whether you'll ever, having seen what coaches go through, you might not ever want to be a coach. But, like, of course, at some point you're going to coach your kids. I think it's highly likely you'll get roped in.
They're trying already. I've managed to fend them off so far at Cobham, but yeah, I think there's going to be a time where it's going to have to come out.
Yeah, what would like the perfect Danny Kerr session look like? Like, imagine you were if you were coaching on a Sunday or if you were coaching in the Prem. What's the stuff that you would like put high value on?
Yeah, I would. I'd definitely say the key word would be it have to be challenging. I wouldn't want an easy session. I wouldn't want people to be able to drift through a session, and that'd be from 1 to 15. I'd want people out of their comfort zones, but giving them the opportunities to express themselves. Not saying maybe I'm having my hookers and tight heads kicking, but I want them to be looking at the space and seeing space and having the options.
Billy Vunipola got a 50-22 today.
Billy did. Class. It was ridiculous. That's Billy. My back row is like.
They're okay.
I know he's got that in the locker.
So you're not letting Lambert. You're not letting Lambert kick. I'm just clarifying.
Lambert's not kicking. But my buzzword, my keyword would be fun. It'd be fun. It'd be energy. It'd be tempo. I'd like to challenge players to be accountable, to back themselves. Definitely back themselves, and not. Obviously, this is the ideal world of the open play of rugby. But any sort of turnover, and I'd want the ball shifted a couple of times, and in the hands of the fast guys, in the hands of the special players, and trying to create as much unstructure as we could in the game as possible.
Nice. And what about like your relationship as a coach and players? Like, which ones have been helpful for you?
Which coaches? Sorry, I lost you there.
Yeah, you mean you don't have to name coaches, but like, if you could design your perfect coach, like, what would the relationship look like?
I think for me, you have to have a relationship. I feel with the coach on a personal level. So for me, Quinn's Conor O'Shea was amazing because he had that relationship with you where the main thing he did was inspire you to go and be yourself and be free and back yourself. And if you made a mistake, on a Monday morning, you're not getting called out because you made a decision. If you don't make a decision and you dally and you kind of bottle it in a way, then you'll get called out. But if you have the balls to make a decision and back yourself, then you will be rewarded for it. So someone like Connor for me was great, and we had a great relationship off the field as well. It was kind of like a second dad to me when I was down here, and in my kind of loose couple of years, he really put an arm around me and looked after me. So someone like Connor, but then, you know, obviously, me and Eddie have probably had our ups and downs, but Eddie's coaching-wise, the things that he sees is incredible. The little nuggets of information he can give you on players or opportunities. You know, his the way he inspires people to play fast and to play quickly is something I want to see more in the England team. Hopefully that we see in the autumn. Because when Eddie's like that and he's on this attacking mindset, I think you'll see an England team that's going to carve people apart. So that's what I'm hoping for.
Sometimes they don't play like they train.
No,
because they train. Which I find really interesting.
Mm, yeah.
So they would train a lot like you, but they wouldn't necessarily play like you, which I'm like, no. I'm fascinated as to the reasons why. Well, obviously, you're going to get to interview Eddie tomorrow. So I'm assuming that means you might not be in the squad, but it would be cool if you were interviewing him because you're in the squad. How are you feeling about? Are you excited to interview him tomorrow?
It's going to be different. It's the first time that I'll have interviewed him. He's been on our podcast a few times, but I've never done it. So no, I think enough time has passed since my last game for England that I'm generally interested to ask him a few questions about this squad. Obviously, a lot of it will be reacting to the lads he's picked. But I'm interested to see and to hear where he wants this team to go, how he wants to set this team up, who's getting the keys to the 10 shirt, who's getting the keys to the shirt that says, sorry, who's getting the keys that says, right, this is how we're going to play. Because I'm hoping with a few Quinn's boys in there, obviously I'm a bit biased, but if Marcus does get those keys to number 10, that I'm hoping that means they're going to play a slightly different way. Because if they don't, then we ain't going to see the real Marcus. And as we talked about before, we want to see the real Marcus.
I think I would give Marcus the keys to number 10 Downing Street at the moment, to be honest.
Yeah,
and he'd do a better job. Yeah. Although, and I know you haven't seen it, but Faz played really well today. And Fordy played really well yesterday. And like,
yeah,
that competition is like tough, isn't it?
It's tough, you know. George, obviously, it's always been George and Owen for the last, 7 or 8 years. And it's been incredibly hard for any other 10 to sneak his way in there. I think Danny Cipriani got a cap or two maybe in South Africa a few years back. But I've been in those camps, mate. Like, Owen and George run that attack, like, alongside. They'll meet with Eddie in the week. They'd start of the week, but then it's Owen and George's team. And they run it. And they did it brilliantly. So it was so hard for anyone else to come in and break that partnership up. I think Marcus has shown, hopefully now, over a couple of years, that he can do different stuff. And he probably sees the game slightly differently. But that's not taking anything away from George. George is an unbelievable player. And I do think you put George on the front foot with options. There's not many better in the world at picking the right pass and playing with that tempo right on the gain line. And then Owen's Owen's this unbelievable leader that, again, you get them to play quickly and on top of people. Owen's one of the best decision makers in the world. So I'd like to see Owen still play at 12 alongside. Obviously, for me, I'd like to see Marcus there at 10. But obviously, you've got George Ford there who's been there, done it. And that's the thing. If they are going to change how they're going to play, then Marcus has to have 3 games. You can't just have 1 and then go back to type almost. I think Eddie knows what Owen can do in the 10 shirt. He knows what George can do in the 10 shirt. He doesn't know yet what Marcus can do in the 10 shirt against the best team in the world, Australia, who are flying at the moment. And then obviously Tonga, that they're gonna dominate. But it's the two later games, the Australia South Africa game, that I'd love to see Marcus get the full go-ahead to show what he can do.
And this is why they pay Eddie the big bucks.
It really is.
Those decisions.
It really is.
And I agree with you. Like, you've got to, if you're picking a Marcus, you've got to be thinking like, yeah, where's this going to be in 10 games? Like, you've got to go, we're making a choice now for 10 games time now. If it's 40 or if it's Marcus or whoever, whatever it is, like, you've got to go, where's this going to get us to? Because in order to win a World Cup, we need to be able to play the game in multiple ways, as the last World Cup showed.
Exactly. I think it's only about, someone said the other day, is it 17 or 18 games till the World Cup or something for England, which is mad, really, when you think about it. You know, that's not an awful lot of games. So, yeah, if they're going to start building new relationships, You know, is there a new nine? Is there a new nine and 10 combination? If there is, they've got to start playing with each other soon, because that's a hard, you know, 8, 9, 10, I'd throw all three of them in that same mix. And if you are picking Owen at 12, then that spine of your team, you have to start getting playing together and experiencing good things, experiencing bad things, learning both. Because surely we've got the strength and depth to really go for this World Cup in 2023. We have to.
Yeah. Maybe we could save time by putting Carewood Smith at 9 and 10, and that would accelerate the growth of the team, wouldn't it?
That'd be nice. That'd be nice, yeah. Wouldn't it? Yeah.
Mate, I'm going to finish with some one-worders, if you're cool with that.
Yeah.
Coaching?
Maybe.
Oh, maybe. I think you're probably more media than coaching, but I think it'll be, my sense would be that you'd be more like a Johnny Wilkinson. You'd be into some of the individual stuff to start with, as opposed to like running a whole team and all the stresses that come with that, would be my guess.
It does look stressful, mate. It does look stressful. I don't know if I could do it, mate. Yeah. Yeah, maybe you're right. Yeah, I'd love to do a little, I'd love to help young nines. I really would. I'd love to help find the next young nines that are going to play for their club or play for their country. So yeah, if I could help in any way, mate, I think that would be great. I'd really love to do that.
Nice, Connor, if you're listening. Second one, Marcus.
Magic.
Hugo.
Wow. Where do I start? Busy.
Busy. He's busy, isn't he? Like, question.
He's very
sport,
busy, that boy.
Dancing.
He's very busy, yeah.
Unbelievable.
He's doing all right. He's doing all right, that boy.
Yeah, no. Quins.
Fun.
Sevens.
Miss it.
Yeah, you're good at sevens.
I never had enough time, Rusty, with my sevens. I'd wish I'd have had like a full circuit, you know, a full year on the circuit. Because I was in, back in those days, it was in and out, wasn't it? If you're not playing for your club. Which I did like, to be fair. I quite like the fact that if you're not going to be playing for your club, then you pick different players from different clubs to go and do it. But I understand you need more togetherness and time together. But I loved it, mate. I loved my time on the sevens. I just wish I'd have had more tournaments.
15s.
Oh, one word.
Yeah, one word. I'll let you have two. If you need
improving.
Them. Mate, it's improving because of the way you guys are playing. Like, people are still like saying to me, the Prem's, you know, I'm thinking, it's quite homogenous. And Quins are probably keeping me alive a little bit at times.
But then look at Sarri's today and what they're scoring 71 points. That never would have happened a few years ago. So hopefully the game's changing a bit.
Yeah, it is definitely happening. And it's interesting because they play against Bath, who are trying to evolve their game. And how much longer do you stick at it, you know, when you're bottom of the league and you're thinking, we want to move this game on? England?
Hopeful.
Eddie?
What's the word? What's the word for like he has to win it now? He has.
I thought you were going to say relentless. I would say relentless for Eddie. Like, I think he's pretty relentless, but you can.
Yeah.
You mean he has to win it now? So like, this is his last chance.
His last chance saloon, I think. He's always said it himself, isn't he? He's done after the World Cup, and he always said, well, the RFU always said, we're bringing Eddie in to win us a World Cup. Yeah. He got so close. Couple of years ago, this is the time. So yeah, let's hope that he gets it right.
Rugby.
Brilliant.
Family.
The most important thing.
Nice, mate. Thanks so much for jumping on. Keeping Danny Kerr well done. When you said toe the line at the start, I wrote it down, put 3 exclamation marks next to it and thought, that doesn't sound like Danny Kerr. So keep it you. Keep not towing the line. I like it.
Yeah.
I'm loving the way you lads are playing.
Cheers, man.
No, stay safe and have fun with Eddie tomorrow.
Cheers, big man. Take care,
mate.
Take care.